Let's do this, Pat.
Thank you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. As you know, I'm your conductor, Joseph Ward, and as always, riding with me is my man with the plan, Mr. Patrick Irvin. What it is, Pat?
What it do?
Yes, sir. And remember, the Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pacts.org. Yeah, and while you're online, as I always tell you, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way, you know, you can always listen to your favorite shows. You can learn more about the Freedom Train. You can learn more about our guests as well. And if you really, really, really want to have the Freedom Train all up in your life like that, you need to make sure you download the Freedom Train on iTunes and Google Play Music. And that way, you can be as cool as you want to be. But before you, and when you're doing all that, make sure you go to Twitter and Instagram, follow us at _ Freedom Train, and like our Facebook Freedom Train page, and then turn 2 cartwheels and give me $5. There it is.
Word.
Yeah. So what's on the table today, Pat? What we got?
So the first thing I want to do is I want to ask you about what's going on with FAMU.
Well, from my research and my questioning and my sources, President Dr. Elmira Mangum, is her contract is not being renewed by the Board of Trustees after like 2.5 years of service. Excellent service, I may add, at the university, helping to boost the reputation and the esteem of the university. Basically, it seems as if she's being released because she didn't fit the culture. She didn't go out her way to make friends. Some people didn't like the way she did some of the things. But overall, she was very successful at what she did, and she actually helped the university get better. And we feel that the Board of Trustees is they being stupid. I'm just saying it like that. They being stupid, and they're letting go or decide not to renew the contract of a very, very, very good university president. And we mad.
And so I'm guessing you were saying something before the show about the student body president holding some sort of town hall meeting?
Yes, Mr. Jalen Smith is his name. He's the student body president of, let me make sure I get his title correct. Jalen Smith is the interim president of the FAMU Student Government Association and a member of the FAMU Student Board of Trustees. And it's an article I'm looking at right now in the Tallahassee Democrat talking about how the students feel that the university isn't paying them any attention. That basically the university is ignoring the student. They're ignoring the student voice, what the student wants, what the students are saying, you know, because ultimately the university is about the students. It's not about the Board of Trustees. They don't have to go to class. It's the students. So it's the environment that the students have, and they feel like they're not being heard, so they have a town hall meeting tomorrow. I just found out about it today. I hope it's been publicized before today. They're having a town hall meeting tomorrow to discuss the issue. So,
what's going on with? Well, I got a couple questions actually. One, What are we hoping will come from this town hall meeting? And two, what's going on with FAMU that they've had, let me count this, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, six presidents since Humphreys left in 2001. So they've had six presidents over the past, 16 years? And then if you go just back to 2012, they've had three presidents since 2012. So what's going on where they can't keep a president? By the way, Humphreys was there for 16 years.
Yeah.
And then we had Henry Louis III, who was there for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Gaines, who was there for 2 years.
Henry Louis III, what years was he there?
He was there January 2002 to June 2002.
All right, yeah. Oh, okay. So that's when I started. I started in August of 2002. So he was there when I was there.
Gaines was from 2002 to 2004.
Okay,
Ryan,
I remember him.
2005 to 2007. So there was actually an interim president in between those two that's not listed.
Right, and then you had Ammons, correct?
So then you had Ammons, 07 to 12. Then you had Robinson, 12 to 14. And then you have Magnum, who is effectively going to be 14 to 16.
Yeah.
And this doesn't even include the various interim presidents from what I'm seeing.
Right.
So, what's the problem? Why is it so difficult for FAMU to hold on to a president?
I don't know. I'm going to be honest. When I was a student, I really didn't pay it too much attention because just the ignorance of being a young person. I didn't take politics serious at that time or the political structures. So I wasn't really paying attention. All I know is they kept switching presidents. But whatever, something in the infrastructure isn't there. And we actually was able to see Mangum's impact. Like, you could physically see that, because I can remember, even when I was a student and when I wasn't a student, physically seeing how the student body population just declined. It literally declined, and now it feels like college again with her. Feels like, okay, this is FAMU. Because, growing up here, FAMU is not only one of the top HBCUs, one of the top schools in the nation, but the culture at FAMU is so rich. And we felt like it was a resurgence of the culture coming back. And it's just unfortunate that this is happening, man. It's stupid that it's happening, man.
So what's the goal of the town hall meeting? What are they trying to accomplish? Do you know?
I don't know the goal. It seems as if it's structured for the students to voice their opinion. But I think they shouldn't go with the goal of just voicing an opinion, but go with, a strategic plan to get things done. And that does take time. I hope planning was put in place. I hope it wasn't just something that they put together and say, hey, we're going to have a town hall meeting next Tuesday. All right, well, let's do this and throw it together like that, because that's not going to be effective. You and I have both been to enough town hall meetings to know that you can't just show up to a town hall meeting that's expecting to talk. And I don't know all the details, but who's throwing the town hall meeting? Who's moderating the town hall meeting? Who are going to be the people at the town hall meeting who you're demanding questions from or you're talking to? Because that matters.
Well, you said you read an article about it in the Tallahassee Democrat, right?
Yeah, I got an article in front of me right now, but it doesn't necessarily go too deep into the...
So it doesn't talk about what the plans are or anything like that? It just basically says there's a town hall meeting?
Yeah. And say, I would like to invite my fellow members of the Board of Trustees to attend a town hall meeting with students and other stakeholders to discuss what is in the best interest of the university. We propose this town hall take place 6 p.m. Wednesday.
I'm going to be honest, Joe. Mm-hmm. That sounds like a screaming match in the venting session.
It does. And see, that's why I start asking these questions.
Yeah.
Because
we've both been to enough, like you said earlier, we've both been to enough town hall meetings to know more often than not, nothing gets accomplished. People just vent. They let out their emotions. They yell and scream. And then they go home feeling good, like they done told somebody something, but nothing real ever, you know, no change.
Did you see the town hall meeting that Obama had after, like, on ESPN after one of the shootings?
No, I didn't. I stopped watching town hall meetings on Tallahassee or on TV after the Ferguson town hall meeting.
But see, like you just said, as I was watching that town hall meeting, I couldn't watch the whole thing. Because if we're having the town hall meeting to talk about how we're going to solve the police violence issue, but we don't come out with plans to solve the police violence issue, we're just talking and you just saying this and saying that, but we don't have no real plans, then what was the purpose of the town hall meeting? But you're supposed to scream at the TV or scream at your computer. That's when you vent.
It's so much better to scream at other people, Joe. Especially when they right there, so you can say, and I told that motherfucker that blah, 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 blah. And all your friends could be like, that's right, you told him.
That's what makes our urban development, the PACS urban development plan, so powerful, though, because it gives the community a structured voice. It teaches the community how to effectively protest, to effectively have a town hall meeting, because we want people to get this clear. We're not saying don't have a town hall meeting. We're saying it's a certain way to have a town hall meeting done to get results that you need. Because think about it. Everything we're doing, we're looking for real results, not moral victories. We don't want to go home feeling good. We want real change. And if we're talking about real structural change, then we have to have some kind of strategic plan in place.
Right. And the deal is, a town hall meeting, any more than 25 people show up and you lose the ability to effectively organize during that meeting. It's too many bodies, too many people. You know, it's a lot. Now, if you already have a plan that you just want to present to the community based off interactions that you've had with individual members, you know, that's one thing. And that's fine. It's perfectly fine. You can make that presentation. But if you come into, and I've seen this fail too many times, if you come into a town hall meeting with the intention of getting 50, 100, 200, 300 people together to create a plan, yeah, no, that's a failed endeavor. So, you know, that's why I'm like, okay, so we're having a town hall meeting. They're inviting the board of trustees out to come. They're inviting the public to show up. That sounds like a screaming match.
Right.
So people can scream at the board of trustees.
Right.
And they're not going to change their mind. They're not going to. So.
Nah. That ain't going to get nobody to change their mind screaming at them.
Yeah, the harsh words aren't going to work. Does the average person really have any power to impact the board of trustees?
Man, I'm going to be real. The average person don't care.
That's real.
I mean, you've heard me say that often. The average person don't really, they might be mad, they may not like it, but they don't really, really, really care, because it really ain't taking no money out of their pocket. And ain't nobody, you know, nobody they know at the university, or if so, hey, they ain't going to stop them from getting their degree, so. You know.
Well, I will say, if they did care, it would be a perfect time to get people to talk about local politics, because your local politicians largely selects who's going to be on the board, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, right. And see, that's why, you know, we had to reschedule our The More You Know event, but I was talking to Mr. Taylor at the community center today, and we're working on rescheduling that, because I feel like that event is so powerful, because we actually get people in the room who know what's going on, who don't mind telling the truth, to tell the truth, and really break this stuff down to people how this works. And why we have to be very, very, very strategic about what we do. We have to be thoughtful about what we do. We have to, things have to be planned out. We can't just keep, we can't keep acting off of emotion. We keep doing the same thing over and over and not paying attention to history. That's why we keep repeating it. That's why we keep getting the same results over and over.
Yep. Take this Kaepernick situation, for instance.
Right.
Another example of a moral victory gone the way moral victories typically go.
And 2 weeks have passed.
Yep. And I was thinking to myself as we were talking last night, We started talking about the little 2 week thing a couple years back. Actually, I can't believe it's been that long.
I think since Trayvon.
Yeah, and it's been constantly getting smaller and smaller. That window of energy, and for those who don't know, the 2 week rule is basically after any major event happens, you have about 2 weeks of energy where people are focused on it. They're energized by it. And they have the ability to be mobilized and organized. Preferably, mm-hmm. you already have organization, so you can capitalize on all that energy to mobilize.
Preferably.
But if you don't get to people within that two-week window, it loses its edge. And so, you know, Trayvon Martin had about 2 weeks of major excitement and media coverage, and then we went on to something else. Mike Brown, Jordan Davis, you name it. You go down the cases, not even just murder cases, but just anything in general that happens. You got about 2 weeks. But then you run into situations that we've been having recently where it hasn't even been a full 2 weeks. It's been a week, 3 days, 5 days, certain events. The video footage where the man, I believe it was in Louisiana, got shot live on
right.
We were actually watching video of a man being murdered by the police. And people were only really talking about that for like 3 or 4 days. And there's actual footage of somebody being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting because with the Kaepernick thing, it actually lasted about 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so,
it did.
You know, maybe our attention span is growing. I don't know.
Well, and my thing now is I think we have asked for our athletes to speak so much. And now that athletes are doing something, we just got comfortable. All right, we can just sit back. Hey, we don't have to do nothing. Just sit back. Let the athletes do it. Just take a knee. I'm more sad that people are just sitting back, just leaving the athletes out there to dry. Like you asked them to talk, now you're leaving them out there to dry, and nothing else is happening because a lot of these athletes, most of these, you see, it's a small percentage of athletes who are taking this stance, and they're being left out to dry. And nothing right now is really coming of that as far as the real purpose of him taking his seat.
Well, the narrative was co-opted. I mean, it was co-opted from before he even got a chance to really voice why he wasn't standing for the flag. The narrative had been created. Colin Kaepernick is against the military, against America, and against police officers. And so nothing that came out of his mouth was really strong enough to refute that narrative. And so that's been the running theme, and that's essentially why he softened his stance recently, and that's, you know, why all of these things are. But at the end of the day, I think we keep wanting high-profile people to speak, expecting them to be like Muhammad Ali. There aren't very many athletes that are as knowledgeable about the issues we need them to be knowledgeable about for them to really speak the way he did. And I think what we really need from our athletes and celebrities is their money, not their voice. Save the talking to people that actually know what the fuck they talking about. But the Colin Kaepernick thing, I mean, you know, it was good while it lasted. Now it's turned into, you know, with everybody doing it, it's watered down. The ability to create change from it now has been completely diminished. So, I don't know. What do we do from here? I mean, like, how do you feel about all that?
Well, when I'm watching ESPN this Sunday, or not this Sunday, last Sunday, whatever, and I see the little news piece that they do about Kaepernick having a meeting with the white guy that's the veteran, and they sit down and they have the conversation about Kaepernick taking the stance. First of all, what we having the conversation about? All right, because if our conversation is about you, you being a part of real structural change, we ain't got nothing to talk about. And then when you ask me to change my stance to make people feel comfortable, like I asked somebody earlier, when has the military, when has any branch of the United States military as a whole unit ever stood up for racism or against racism in America? So we want to talk about not taking the stance, or we want to talk about making people feel uncomfortable. Hell, we feel uncomfortable just being black people in America, knowing that it's so many white people want us dead, and it's so many white people that are afraid for us to take a stance, and there's so many white people who are going to be silent. And we want to talk about being uncomfortable. The whole purpose of a protest is to shake things up. It's not to make people comfortable. And when you allow somebody who works for the government, who you, because the government, let's just be real, that's part of this structural stuff, and you let this person tell you how to take your stance, you've lost power. You've lost the meaning of your stance. Why are you taking the stance again? Because it's not about you bringing attention to police brutality anymore, is it?
And I'm going to be honest and let people know that we not just two people. Look, I'm former military. I'm a veteran myself, you know. So I didn't fight for no goddamn, I didn't go to war. I didn't fight. I didn't send planes to bomb motherfuckers for no goddamn flag. I didn't do it for a goddamn song. I did it for the people. You know, and I think anybody that's in the military or that has been in the military will relay the same message. We don't fight for a flag or a song. We fight for the people and their rights to do what they want and to exercise their beliefs. And Colin Kaepernick, and this is where I say, I talk to my military friends all the time. Well, my military associates all the time. And when we talk and Kaepernick comes up, I've never heard a single one of them say, I'm offended because he don't stand for the national anthem. I've never met a single one that said that. I haven't heard that come out of the mouths of a single military person. Not a single one. And I was on a Marine base 2 weeks ago. And even on the Marine base, I didn't hear a single person say they were offended by him not standing for the national anthem.
But it's not the it's not, because I've seen a lot of military people saying they don't really care, you know. And I don't know a lot, but through the social media I've seen, but it's mostly white people who are saying, I have family who's military. So what? Like, so you basically when he's taking this stance and he's chose the national anthem because he knew people was going to pay attention. Now, when he's taking this stance to bring attention to fight police violence, so for all these people who say they're not racist, when you bring in, if your response is, I don't like it because it's offensive to the military, so you just totally chose to just totally just ignore everything that's going on, right? Just going to ignore it and make it about you and your family member, right? Because last time I checked, freedom didn't have restrictions. Last time I checked. Am I wrong?
No, you're wrong. It does have restrictions. Negroes don't have freedom. And that goes, that extends not just to Negroes themselves, but it also extends to half Negroes. So,
yep.
You know, period. And we... So, you know, that's kind of where we're at right now. It sucks, but no. White people are still the only people. White people largely still believe that they're the only people with freedoms and rights. And if you offend them in any way, shape, or form by exercising your rights,
right,
you're wrong, and they expect an apology.
Right.
Which is the craziest thing in the world.
Because it's like, I saw a picture of four players from the Miami Dolphins. Two of them taking a knee with their hand over their heart. Y'all boys, man, sit down. Why did you take a knee? Why? What was your purpose? You taking up space. Get out of here. That's weak. Get out of here with that, man. Come on, man. What's the purpose of taking the knee with the hand over your heart? What's the purpose of taking the knee? And then the Seahawks. Come on. Really? Let's call them out. That was stupid. Y'all wait. Come on. First of all, you're gonna try to alert people for days. Hey, we doing something. We're going to do something. We're going to take a stance. And then y'all come out there and lock arms. Like, I'm listening to ESPN radio yesterday, and it's like the Seahawks, what they did was so stupid. You got the regular white guys who don't get it asking, like, what did that mean? Now, what was the purpose of that? Like, what was the purpose of you all coming out there locking arms and standing together? What are you saying? I mean, you're still standing for the flag, though. I mean, what are you saying?
I mean, I'm with the white guys, though. I want to know what that means, too, because I don't, like I said, man, and it's crazy because the whole thing started because he wanted to start a conversation about the way police were abusing their authority.
Right.
And largely, we still have not had that conversation.
We still haven't. We still haven't, but even like I've been always asking, who are we having that conversation with?
Right. Right. Here's the deal. Like, people honestly think that we can talk through everything. Look, you can't logic your way out of a situation with a bunch of people that don't have the same type of logic you have.
Man.
If they did have the same type of logic you have, you wouldn't be in that situation in the first place.
But that comes back to our ignorance, our blatant, purposeful ignorance of history. You have to know who you're dealing with. Like, what has changed about white culture to make you think that white people today are different from white people 400 years ago, like, as a whole? Like, what has changed? How can you measure that? So what national meeting has white people gotten together to help improve how they, you know, see black people and stuff? Like, because last time I checked, there's an abundance of white people still working to uphold the system.
Well, and if we want to be perfectly honest, black people are not really in a better position in terms of real power.
We not.
You know, Reconstruction was probably our best years, and that was over 100 years ago, roughly.
They were. That's when we could actually really do something.
So, you know, like, but you have a lot of people that don't even know what Reconstruction is. They think, you know, 1964, the 1960s was the first time we could vote. Not realizing that, you know, we had that right.
Right.
In the late 1800s, early 1900s.
They took it away from us.
Black people and white people could marry each other in the early 1800s, you know, late 1800s, early 1900s. They took that away from us. We could go into any restaurant. They took that away from us. We could, you know, we could run for public office. They took that away from us. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like all of these things are new. And back then it was real. You actually had government programs like the Freedmen's Bureau and other places that were in place to protect black people's rights to be citizens in America. This was late 1800s, early 1900s. Our ability to maneuver and control and influence has never, ever, since that time, been equal to what it was. But now, because you got motherfuckers sitting around saying, well, I could ride on the front of the bus and I can go in any restaurant I want. You know, that's not, you're missing the whole point of what oppression was. That oppression is not, I can't ride on the front of the bus. Oppression is, I can't own my own bus company.
Right.
You know, oppression is not, I can't sit down next to white people and eat food. Oppression is, I can't own my own restaurant.
Or I can't eat, period.
Right, or I can't eat. You know, like, that's oppression. Oppression is not, these superficial things that we keep thinking oppression is. Are those things right? No. Are they fair? No. Do they play a part in what oppression is? Yes, they do. But those aren't the core systemic issues involved with oppression. Real oppression is not having the ability to manifest power or manifest the things that you want to manifest in your life.
Right.
Like, not being able to go to a school with white people. Can you go to school? You know what I'm saying? Like, and I feel like I'm not being clear. I feel like people aren't going to understand what I'm saying, and that's fine. You know, because at the end of the day, the show isn't long enough for me to give people a history lesson. But I really wish people would really, like you said, study your history, learn your history, know what's going on. Like, we really aren't in better shape.
I mean, we aren't. I mean, if you and see, that's why I keep telling people, you need to go back and study the master teachers. Study the master teachers first. I often tell people, I was fortunate enough to learn from people who learned from Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben and Ashra Kwesi and Dr. Francis Crest Wilson. Like, these were my professors who were the students of these people. So I had a chance to learn from the people who learned from the masters, and I felt like they gave me a thorough historical foundation. Now, I've always told people, get you a thorough historical foundation. You need to really understand what's going on. And don't just let your historical foundation be all African. Study the history of the world. Study your enemy. Study these white people. See how they live. Cross-reference all your information. Do that. I mean, and that way you will understand, people will understand what you're saying. But if they don't, basically what you're saying is, we keep having moral victories. And we keep overemphasizing these moral victories. But when you go back and look at the landscape, we don't have anything. We don't have any real power in this country. We can't effectively defend ourselves like we really want to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't own any industries in this country. Not one do we own a complete industry.
No, we're not even, like, we're not even major players in any industry, which is a shame considering we have more minority business than any other cultural group.
Right.
You know, like, last I looked anyways, I'm sure the numbers have changed, but the new numbers haven't been put out yet, so all I can do is go off with all the numbers that are out. Black people have more businesses than Hispanics, Asians, and everybody else. So, well, actually, Hispanics and Asians are the only other two cultural groups that attract.
But it's just that collective power, that collective movement, that collective force we lack.
But that's because, again, we're like, I get so frustrated with this moral victory stuff because I'm to the point now where I don't even speak on issues via social media and things like that because I know people don't want to hear what I have to say when it comes to it, and that's because what I have to say isn't positive. You know what I want our players to start doing, and I said it earlier. I don't need Colin Kaepernick's voice. I don't need it, nor do I want it. I want his money. That's his part in the struggle. That's all of the athletes' parts in the struggle. And you can say it sound cold or whatever, but that's what it is. They have the resources, the financial resources, to make a major difference immediately.
You don't
need your voice. Your voice is first off, it's going to take too long for your voice to even be strong enough to where anybody gives a damn about what it's saying.
I'm going to say this because I think we are longing for another Ali.
We are.
But we have to remember Malcolm X was Ali's griot. Like, and I'm going to say that again. When Ali had questions, he turned to Malcolm X. He could turn to Elijah Muhammad. Yeah, you may not agree with everything that Elijah Muhammad did, all of his actions. But Elijah Muhammad was a very, very, very smart person who built a foundation that helped empower masses of black, or I ain't going to say masses, but a good number of black people. So these were the people.
I was just going to say real quick, we don't have to remember that. We have to learn it, because too many people don't
true.
Even know it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But that's why Muhammad Ali was so on his game, because Malcolm X was his right-hand man that he could turn to and get information. And if Malcolm didn't have it, he can go to Elijah Muhammad. Who does Kaepernick have? I know the black guy, I can't remember his name, he's the sociologist from USC. They were saying he consulted Kaepernick before he went out and did what he did. But no disrespect to the sociologist, but that man ain't on the same level as Malcolm and Elijah, because Malcolm and Elijah, they weren't just talking about it, they were being about it.
Right, right. You don't need, you really don't need to be, like, you, if you want advice about how to make things better, talk to a activist that knows their history. Don't talk to a historian that's not an activist.
Right.
You need
right.
to know what do the people on the ground need. There are people doing work. We don't need your voice. We don't. We have our own voices. And a lot of us would prefer to move in silence.
Right.
We don't want attention drawn, because that makes it more difficult for us to do the things that we feel we need to do. And it takes, again, rookie coming into the NFL, on average, it's going to take him, what, 2, 3, 4 years before he reaches any level of significance where what he says matters?
Well, it depends on who that rookie is and the notoriety that he comes into the league with. And then, not only that, his play.
No first-round draft pick.
Well, see, even in that, like, let me say, if you, let's say you could have a 5th-round draft pick who comes to the league. You're right. When you come in, you have no voice. And it's not until, they probably not going to take a real stand to that second contract, because if you're coming in a 5th-round draft pick, I mean, your contract like money, so they can get rid of you at any time. So when you got big money contract, they got to think twice about getting rid of you, because they got to be strategic how they move. So, but that comes with your performance, though.
Well, but here's the deal, though. Even if you come in on a rookie minimum contract, you're still making the vast majority. You're still making more money than the vast majority
right.
of black people.
Right.
You can start making an impact immediately as a rookie.
I mean, me and you do it now. If you're an NFL player and you live in the state of Florida, because this is where I am, so I know about this. It costs $78 to start a nonprofit organization. Like, literally, it costs $78 to become a legal entity. Now, you're just gonna I'm not talking about operation costs. It costs $800 to get your 501c3, but that's really not a lot of money. And average people can do that. So if average not only can average people do that? Average people do that. College students do that. We see them. I know them. I've done it. Take the money out of my pocket. I've started 2 businesses with the money out of my pocket. So this is just more information that people need to know. Like, I tell people that all the time, it don't take that much money to become a legal entity. Starting a business is, because everybody has this single idea when it comes to starting stuff. But once again, like, This is why we are here. This is why we do what we do, so we can get this information out. Because, yeah, he took the knee. Yeah, he took the seat. Yes, he did all that. And he started all these whirlwinds, and his main intention was to bring attention to the conversation. And we're still not having this conversation, because we like to get distracted easily, but we wasn't prepared to take the mantle anyway. Like, we was not prepared. No matter what he did, we weren't prepared.
Well, that's why I said, bro, and it's I'm not, because I understand athletes might not necessarily have the time to start a nonprofit, but what I'm saying is, if you get a rookie minimum contract of, I don't know, $200,000-$300,000 a year, whatever the rookie minimum is in the NFL, you can take, even if you only on a practice squad, shit, you can take, because I think they minimum is like $30,000 or $40,000 a year. You can take $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 and give it to a nonprofit that's doing things for, you know, the issues that you feel strongly about, and just like that, you've made an impact that it goes far and beyond anything that you could have said to the press. You know what some of these nonprofits can do with $10,000, $20,000, $30,000? Man, they would be able to change the world. You got some of these brilliant minds out here with no resources to back their brilliant ideas. You know what some of these people could do with a $30,000 or $40,000 check?
Right.
Man, and that's why I'm saying, like, these people, their strength is their earning power. Their economic offense is their strength. They're the offensive players in our black economic community. And we keep asking them to do things that aren't playing to their strengths. What is Colin Kaepernick's strength? I don't care how smart he is. He might be smart as a whip. Right now, his strength is throwing the goddamn football.
And Colin Kaepernick stage, he's the beginning of stage one.
Right. And that's the other thing. You really don't know enough to be speaking anyway, but, you know, I know a lot of people are going he can talk, blah, 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 and he should. He should be getting his money, and he should be funneling that money into the community. If him speaking out is going to run the risk of him losing the ability to provide money, resources, then he has to consider that option. He has to think about it from a strategic level. Well, how many other NFL players are donating money towards these causes? If it's not a lot, then you need to shut up so you can keep funding shit. If it is a lot, then you can feel free to voice your opinion. But if you're of the stature that he is, Ali could do what he did because he was the heavyweight champion of the world. They can't fuck with him. He can give money, beat people asses, and talk all the shit he wanted to talk. They couldn't do anything, especially considering he was in a sport where at the end of the day, you're going to have to see me in the ring one-on-one, and I'm going to beat your ass, end of the day.
And he had the backing of the Nation of Islam.
Right, and he had the backing of the, not just organizations, but the community itself. You know what I'm saying? So, and a lot of that was built off the fact that Ali was actually, one, he was standing strong. There was none of the weak shit. And two, he was actually giving back a lot to the community. Like, for athletes with resources, that's where it starts. It doesn't start with you vocalizing. This is just my opinion, of course. But it doesn't start with you vocalizing how you feel. It starts with you giving up some of that money in your pocket. Because the revolution is not free. This shit, it costs money to do this. People spend their entire days researching, planning, strategizing, creating documents, meeting people, making phone calls. Like, it really is a full-time job, and people have bills to pay. Like,
right.
And that's what I don't understand. Like, not only are we not strategic about it, we're not even considerate about the motherfuckers that's actually out there fighting for us.
Well, you know. Well, it's just the same thing with Black Lives Matter. If you got to bring that in, like, that's how we're still screaming in the streets under the banner of Black Lives Matter. And there's so many people who are out there screaming under the banner of Black Lives Matter and have no idea of how they've been screwed over. Because it's no, I mean, like the video I saw the other day of the lady talking about how the Black Lives Matter organization came in and kind of took over the Hands Up, Don't Shoot movement that was in Ferguson. And, you know, turning what it is, and money was passed out and all these things here. But they seemed like they had some semblance of organization, but no communal support. And so that's why they were overran by the Black Lives Matter organization, because they had no communal support. And we got a lot of people out here who are fighting, and support is far as far as few, I mean, we can't, like, where do you find it at? And you got people operating, and, like, the lady who was talking, I can't remember her name, but she seemed like she ain't safe. Like, she's speaking out against Black Lives Matter, and her life is getting threatened, and stuff like this.
I can speak from personal experience about that, and I know we know somebody else who can as well, but I think the Ferguson situation was a unique situation in that Ferguson got overrun with outsiders.
Right.
And so even if they did have community support, because of the sheer number of outsiders there, I mean, because they're still operating in the community from what I gather, so they had something, but just, I don't know, bro, the situation is, like with Black Lives Matter, I'll use PACs, for instance, since they're our sponsors. We know what they've done. They've sent, I want to say something around 1,000, 2,000 bottles of water out to Flint. They've created a Black History curriculum. They've created a mentoring program. They've done all these things, and they've only gotten, about $2,000, maybe $3,000 in donations over the past 2 years. And Black Lives Matter has gotten $100 million in donations and grants and things.
What have
they done?
It hasn't
generated anything. Like, I know we having protests and they've had town hall meetings and this, that, and the third, but every last single one of their major accomplishments that I've seen, and I'm using the word major very loosely. When I say major, I mean major in terms of what else is on the list. Every last single one of the major accomplishments that I've seen have been really attributed to other organizations that they just claim. Because right now, if you're fighting for the community, they just say that you're a part of Black Lives Matter. I've been hearing somebody tell me that I'm a part of Black Lives Matter. I'm a part of the movement. I have no affiliation, connection, or desire to be
a part of the
organization.
Nah. I mean, but see, that's the thing, though. People need to understand that because you have, like, Black Lives Matter organization pissed me off because you got so many people out here who are truly fighting in the community. And even Colin Kaepernick, I wonder, has he really studied Black Lives Matter? Because if you go to the website of the organization and you read through their stuff, they're not about black lives. They're not. They have a specific agenda, a specific women-only LGBTQ agenda that they want to push. And these are the only people that they're focusing on. And my thing is, me personally, if you black, I'm messing with you as long as you are about the cause. If you black and you ain't about the cause and you down with supporting white supremacy, then you part of the problem. But if you black, I don't care what your background orientation, whatever. If you black and you know you black first and you down for the cause, let's ride, let's make stuff better. See, Black Lives Matter, they not down. That's not their intention. They have a specific, like on their website, when they talking about they want to destroy the nuclear family. They want to destroy the traditional male female relationships. Like, why does that have to be destroyed?
Well, I mean, that goes into the hypocrisy of the movement, and what we were talking about earlier in terms of being strategic. People just, they don't look at where things could go because we get so caught up in emotion. And I don't, honestly don't think a good many of people have actually been to their website and actually read. I mean, like I said, they have an area on their website where they talk about the problems with focusing on heterosexual cisgender males and how it leaves everyone else out in the cold, and yet and still they built their entire platform
to leave the black man out in the cold
off the death of black men. Like I haven't seen, and I'm not saying there aren't any, but I haven't seen very many Black Lives Matter protests for all of the women that have been killed. And beyond that, this whole idea that cisgender heterosexual males have dominated the power structure in the pro-black vacuum is
that's bull.
There have been plenty anybody that's really in the movement can tell you that the sisters, more often than not, are out in the forefront. And anybody that's really in the movement recognizes and respects that. Like, there is no... I haven't met any men... If anything, every single man that I've met that's really out in the movement is constantly saying, we need to get more men involved.
Right. Now, I think what they do is they take some instances because, you know, there have been cases of inequality. There have been sexual violence and all these things. I know you're not denying that, but I think that they're taking some of those instances and painting a broad brush, you know, this organization, and are making it seem like that black men have oppressed black women through fighting against oppression. And I'm like, Martin Luther King, like, who chose Martin Luther King? Like, who chose him? Like, we know there are aspects of inequality and all these things here, but to the extent that they're taking it, I don't know.
Well,
I can't support that.
I'm going to catch flack for this, but I feel like they're ill-informed. And that comes from me listening to their interviews, listening to their debates, listening to them talk. I don't hear a whole lot of historical knowledge when I listen to some of their quote-unquote high-ranking officials speak. But the other thing is, I don't believe they're of the community. I don't believe they have the best interest of the whole community at stake. And as such, I don't feel like any codes of conduct that I might utilize normally in dealing with black people in black institutions apply to them, because I feel like they're being extremely damaging to the community as a whole, especially with their blatant attacks on black men.
Right. Yeah, I mean, first of all, you can't be for the community and accepting donations from the establishment. Like, how are you fighting for equality and rights and all these things, and you're being directly funded by these corporations that you're supposed to be fighting? Like, you directly funded by these, and I was listening to an interview. They were saying Twitter was sponsoring one of the black dudes, D Ray something. I don't know his name, but he's been sponsored by Twitter and some other stuff, and they're sending him around the world to conferences and stuff. Like, what does that have to do with Black Lives Matter?
Well,
they hijacked
a politician, if memory serves correctly, from an article I read.
They hijacked the movement, the organization, the Black Lives Matter organization hijacked the Hands Up, Don't Shoot original Black Lives Matter movement. They hijacked it, and like you were saying, they have so much disdain for black men, but they built their whole platform and all of their protests are built off the death of black men. Like, where was Black Lives Matter when a lot of these women are being killed? They don't have the same force out there. Now, I will say that people need to know the difference between the organization and the movement. People need to understand the difference. The movement don't have the funds. The organization do. And the reason why I say that, because that stupid-ass Tommy Lauren girl, she was interviewing this black dude. And, you know, like I said last week, they were asking for Black Lives Matter to be a disaster relief organization. And even though I disagree with everything the Black Lives Matter organization stand for, they're not a disaster relief organization. You know, that's not what they're there for. And you can't be the one saying, well, put up some money when your ass ain't put up no money. But people need to understand the difference between the organization and the movement, and really study the organization. Really go to the website. Really do your research. Is the organization really for us? I mean, I think not. If you look at their movements, the last couple of things that they've made, the things that they've done recently, I mean, you can't honestly say that the Black Lives Matter organization is for all black people. They're intentionally excluding the black man. They are enemies of black men. So how is it about black lives when half of those 23 chromosomes you got an issue with?
Well, here's the deal. We have to get to a point where we're not so emotionally driven, and we're not so, like, we just have to be more strategic about it. And like you said earlier, we have to gain more historic knowledge so that we can better reference the history. You know, you listen to these Black Lives Matter protesters and all these other people, these young people who, this ain't your grandma's movement, this ain't your, well, maybe if you had studied their movement, you realize you basically doing the exact same thing they did. So, yeah, this is my grandma's movement. This is my mama's movement.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what this is, because even though you might be more vocal and more violent about it, if you will, and when I use violence, I don't mean physical violence. I mean social violence, things of that nature.
Man.
Though you might be more bold with your expression of it, you're basically doing the exact same thing they did.
Man, these people are bold with their expression through social media.
Right, well, there you go. But, I mean, when it comes down to, look, I'm a part of the Black Lives Matter movement. And the movement,
right,
in my opinion, has been around since the 50s and 60s. You can see motherfuckers holding up signs.
I said Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
The movement never went away. It fell out of the mainstream. But even in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s, people were still engaged in the struggle.
Matter.
The movement,
right,
is the totality of black people trying to create a better environment.
Because, right,
yes, I'm a part of that movement. And I'm a part of it from the standpoint of the black perspective. So I focus on black progress in terms of Black Lives Matter. What can I do with black people to make Black Lives Matter so that our standard of living and our quality of life goes up? That's where I'm at. What I don't fuck around with, it's the white progress aspect of it. Now, if that's the route you choose to go, more power to you. I think it's a fruitless endeavor. I see where it's needed in some regards, but I'd rather focus on getting real results rather than banging my head against the wall. But people really need to understand that for any side you choose to be on, if you're not doing things to make things genuinely better, that means creating institutions, creating programs, creating things. Like, you can't just tear something down and leave a vacuum. That's not the way society or culture works. You destroy something by building a replacement for it. It's kind of like with smokers. When they want people to stop smoking, they oftentimes will say, you need something to do with your hands. You got to give your brain something else that it can use to take up that processing power or that space that it was using originally to do something else with. It's the same with any other habit. You want to break a bad habit, you don't just try to stop doing the negative shit.
You get a good habit.
You find something positive to do instead. And you
right.
Scrub them out. So if you're saying that you're trying to destroy white supremacy, but you haven't built anything to replace it, then I question two things. One, I question the genuineness of your argument. And the other part I question is the accuracy of your knowledge. How much research have you really done on this system? I mean, like I said earlier, they've gotten $100 million. What, like, if I meet an organization that's gotten $1 million and I don't see anything from that, I'm not fucking with you. If I see an organization that's got $50,000 and I don't see nothing from it, I'm not fucking with you. This organization has gotten $100 million. Tell me what they have built. And that's
Man,
not
look.
Just them. That's all of the organizations that are getting large lump sums of money. That's all of these athletes. You talked about the Seattle Seahawks protest where they locked arms. Imagine what would have happened if all of those players, all 32 of them, or however many, had decided, you know what, all of us are going to take $10,000 and donate it to a national charity. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what is that, $320,000? Come on, man. Really?
Man, look, my thing is, people just need to look in your own backyard. Look at the organizations who are in your local area who are putting in work, who don't have a tenth of the money that Black Lives Matter have, and look at the work that they're doing. I could be here all day naming organizations here in this city who, like, people I see people I see who, hell, some of them work with me, and we know how much we make, and we're making it happen with the money out of our pocket. Like, come on, man. Like, people got to wake up, and we have to do a better job to stop being duped, man.
Right.
To stop falling for the okey-doke every time something sounds good, because we are so thirsty for change. Like, if you're that damn thirsty for change, won't you be the damn change?
Bro, I do not get caught up in the hype. That's why, like I said, I don't speak on anything until I see action. So, does Colin Kaepernick need to be protected? Of course he does. He's a member of the community. And he did stick his neck out by doing what he did. So, of course he needs to be protected. But am I on his bandwagon? Hell no. I need to see real activity. You not standing for the... Look, I was in the military and I didn't stand for the national anthem. That's not enough for me to be on your bandwagon. That's not significant, in my opinion, for me. So, I need to see... for me, athlete, entertainer, celebrity, you want me to be on your bandwagon? I want to see you donating money, and it don't have to be to my organization. If any organization doing work, because I support anybody doing work, period. So, you know, I take what little bit of money I got, and I'm a member, paid my dues and this, that, and the third to damn near 15, 20 different organizations claim that they working for the community. So, I mean, for the most part, most of them only asking for like $30 a year. Shit.
Man.
So, I mean, I just don't... We have to...
Put your money where your mouth is.
And less emotional. And we... Man. You know what else? We have to make sure that we understand what real power is and how to affect it. And it's, you know, like, stop just getting emotional and doing shit. Figure out what you can do that'll make a difference and do that. But, you know, you got to think a little bit about it first. And research. I'm sorry. I'm done.
Nah, I mean, that needs to be said. Soapbox. Yeah, he stood on it. So what? So what? I mean, you know, we got to wake up. We got to wise up. We got to stop falling into the same. It's like we're walking through a forest. And we're walking back and forth on the same path and keep stepping in the same bear trap and keep complaining. And it hurt every time, but we keep stepping in the same bear trap. And the bear trap haven't moved, but we just keep stepping in it.
Yeah, we keep walking on that mother. Almost, you know, it gets to the point now where you start wondering, well, damn, does it feel good to have that big clothes down on your leg like that? I mean... I don't like it, but
right.
You know what, Joe? We need to hurry up and get famous so that when the next athletes decide they want to do something, they
we
call
can counsel
us.
Them. Right. Yeah. We do. Hey, man, y'all listeners, y'all help us get famous. Stop playing.
Well, make him famous, because I don't want to be famous, because I want to still be able to go to the goddamn store whenever I want.
I'm going to be able to go to the store, because trust me, I ain't changing. So, and then, yes, I will be the dude walking down the street on a Saturday who not matching. Yep, that's me.
I don't want fame, bro. I can do without fame. I don't want people knowing my name all crazy and whatnot. I
just want resources and success.
The influence would be nice, and the resources would be nice.
But that's my main thing.
Deal without the fame.
Wealth, access to resources, access to real assets. That's what I want. Really going down in the South. So, with that being said, hey, man, y'all know how we do, man. Y'all tune into the Freedom Train so we can give y'all the real whenever you need it. We don't sugarcoat it. We don't hold it back. And, yeah, we might be criticized, but, hey, we're going to be consistent with it. And you're going to love us for it at the end, because we won't turn our back on you. And we don't just talk the talk. We actually walk the walk. So, if you're in the Tallahassee area, remember, September 30th, we're having Healthy Halftime at Gene Cox Stadium for the Rickards and Bainbridge in the Bainbridge High School football game. And Healthy Halftime basically is a health and resource fair at the football game, where we're going to have actual vendors within the realm of health passing out information and having free resources available for you at the football game for parents and students. And after the game, we're going to do what we call into the night where we actually go into our high-risk neighborhoods here, or we don't call them high-risk, we just call them home, but go into our neighborhoods and pass out information and resources from probably like 10 that night to 2 in the morning. Also, October 14th through the 17th is Tallahassee Community Healing Days. It will be at the Hi-Fi Jazz Cafe. Friday the 14th, it will start at 6 o'clock, and it will go till about 9 to 10 o'clock. Saturday will be all day, and Sunday will end about 6 o'clock. So y'all make sure y'all come out there and join us, and because we got a lot of events, a lot of things coming up, and y'all make sure you stay tuned. And if you have any events and anything out there, make sure you get it to us so we can tell everybody about your event, not just in Tallahassee, but around the world. Pump it up, pump it up, pump it up. I can't see you. There it is.
Yeah.
Hey man, I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin, and thank you for tuning in to the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. Remember, our mission is to connect professionals, business owners, and resources to our community members to help uplift and empower our communities. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PACS Inc. That's PACTSINC, which is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the trace of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That's PACTSINC.org. And make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, _FreedomTrain. Subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music, and like our Freedom Train Facebook page. Oh yeah, and go to my website for my book, my African history book, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 1, North America. My website is www.ontheshoulders1. Don't type in the number one, just the number one. ontheshoulders1.com, and support a brother. And I'm dropping all this African history information on your head. Pat, what you got coming up?
Nothing, because I move in silence.
Hey, but the Independence Day Project coming up soon, too. So y'all make sure y'all go to wauwhataboutus.com to learn more about the Independence Day Project, because me and Pat going to be in that movie, and I might take my shirt off.
There you go. That's what y'all do.
I
do have 2 books coming out, so just be on the lookout. I'll reveal more information as we get closer to the release date. One book is actually going to be free of charge, but you're not going to be able to get it through traditional means. It's going to be more specialized. But the other book will be a regularly distributed book on the black family. So be on the lookout for that. And then, other than that, gangsters move in silence. So yeah.
There you go. Oh yeah, and I forgot to say, I have an African history curriculum quiz app coming out. It's going to be a living interactive app, and when I say living, that means the app, it's going to come stock with like 500 questions total. And basically, I've created quiz questions for all the characters that I've profiled on my website and created a whole curriculum so you can go and learn more about these characters. So it's going to come stock with like 500 questions. And then it's going to be updated on a weekly or biweekly basis with the new quiz, with new information about new characters and people. So you have a continual source of African history. And they're only $24.99. You can drop more than that in the club. So support a brother, support Pat, support PAX, support the Freedom Train. Black power, black power. And with that, 2 fingers up like a player, split them apart, put them back together, split them apart, put them back together, split them apart, because we out.